asset there. Caxon turned to the Comcast bid. Ms. Estrin, could you tell us when you, as a board member, first learned of the Comcast approach and then what the board did after learning?
I found out about it, I think, very soon after Michael got a call, she answered, presumably referring to Brian Roberts' call to Eisner on February 9th.
Mitchell jumped in before Estrin could get very far in this potentially dangerous narrative. Every member of the board was informed and made aware of the fact that a phone call might be made so that the call was not unexpected, and all members were aware of, I guess, what I will call the interest. Mr. Eisner responded in accordance with the wishes of the board. Eisner elaborated. There had been some indirect, vague conversations that led us to believe that this phone call could happen. Every board member was made aware of those conversations either by Senator Mitchell or myself. Because we were led, had some sense they were going to come, we crafted the response before the telephone call was made. The response was vetted with three outside advisors. We discussed the response extensively, and when I happened to be sitting at my desk when Mr. Roberts called, and I put the response up on the computer and gave it word for word, and the subject was immediately changed by him, and that was the end of the call. It took Glass Lewis only 2 days to issue its recommendation, and it was another rebuke to Eisner, as well as to George Mitchell. In unusually harsh language for a shareholder advisory service, its report stated that the Disney board has been notoriously insular, famously gullible, and blindly loyal to Mr. Eisner. Given the control Mr. Eisner is accustomed to, we are troubled that he still wields tremendous power over the operation of this board. Our concerns are substantial. As for Mitchell, the firm concluded, we do not believe he is independent in the true spirit of independence, and questioned his naming John Bryson as head of the governance committee when Bryson's wife was a senior executive of a Disney joint venture. Mitchell should have known better, the firm scolded. The revelation in the Glass Lewis proceeding that Eisner had consulted with directors prior to the February 9th phone call from Roberts and had been reading from a script created a furor both within the Comcast camp and among institutional shareholders at Disney. Eisner's reference to indirect, vague conversations all but confirmed that Mitchell had been talking to the intermediary and that this was not a complete fabrication, as Disney had publicly maintained. Comcast executives and advisors were now more convinced than ever that Mitchell had panicked and run for cover. Perhaps there had indeed been some misunderstandings, and Comcast had interpreted Mitchell's comments as more encouraging than he had intended, but they still believed the words had been spoken. In any event, had such a possible Comcast bid been discussed with all the board members in advance of Roberts' phone call, as Mitchell maintained? Judith Estrin's answer in the Glass Lewis presentation was certainly unpersuasive. As questions multiplied about what Disney's directors knew and when, Disney had to issue a press release. The board had a process in place in how to respond regarding any communication regarding an overture and what the proper procedure was for handling it. The procedure was followed. Yet the statement left open the possibility that the script from which Eisner read was intended as a generalized response.